Welcome to Stay on Course with me, Julie Riga. My life has been a roller coaster of highs and lows, but what I know to be true is that when we are grounded in our purpose and savor the sweet moments of life, we are truly a success. Today, you are going to get the ingredients for success because life is salty and life is sweet. Together, let's explore the possibilities of our own lives and learn from thought leaders around the globe. Ready, guys? Let's cook it. Welcome, welcome everyone to the next edition of the Stay on Course podcast. And today I have Doug C. Brown, and he is the CEO of CEO Sales Strategies and a sales revenue and profit growth expert. He is the creator of the Top 1% Academy, where he trains on how to sell buyers, whether they be CEOs, business owners, entrepreneurs, on how to be the top 1% of sales earners. Doug, welcome to the Stay on Course podcast.
Hey, Julie, thanks for having me here. I'm very grateful to be here.
Thank you. And before we get really into the meat of what we're going to talk about today, I ask all of my guests, what is your favorite food?
Well, my favorite food is lasagna. And the reason being is I think it's the cottage cheese. I love cottage cheese. And I remember when I was, my mom told me this story. I think it was maybe two and a half or whatever. She said she and my father were watching television one night, and all of a sudden she heard this like little lip smacking noise. And they looked at, around the corner, and they saw the light on in the kitchen. And, so they went out to investigate, and there was my little 2-year-old self in the refrigerator with my hand in the cottage cheese, just eating away at the cottage cheese. And so I don't know, it's that or I'm part Italian. I'm really not sure, but that is my favorite food. I love lasagna.
I love lasagna too. That's a good one. Thank you for sharing that. And today we're going to talk about sales. You are the sales expert. And I'm just curious, why sales? People find sales to be a little uncomfortable. They may not want to do it, but why for you is sales something you're so passionate about?
Well, it's communication. Sales is communication. So it's building relationships and it's communication. People have this idea of sales as, well, it's, you know, an arm twisting, you know, used car sales personality, you know, they'll call all these, and that is selling too. But it's manipulative selling. So like true sales, win-win selling is one of the most helpful things that people can do. And we all sell. I mean, you know, Dan Pink wrote a great book called The Sell is Human, where he talked about we're selling every single day. You know, yeah. It may not be formalized sales, but, you know, the best salespeople in the world I have found are children. Actually, I just had a conversation with a friend of mine. And he's from Poland. His son's name is Fabian. Fabian lost a tooth. You know, it's at that age where the teeth, you know, come out. And it was kind of wobbly. The tooth was wobbly. So his father said to him, you know, if you take the tooth out yourself, we'll give you 20 Polish, what they call them, zlotys, which is a dollar, Polish dollar. And Fabian said, oh, wow, okay. And so he started wiggling the tooth, and he said, but we're going to Spain, right? And his father said, yes. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, if I take my tooth out in Spain, how about I get 20 euros? Now, the reason he said that was because the zloty to the euro is about every euro is worth 4 zlotys. So he was thinking instead of getting 5 euros, he's getting 20 euros. This is a little, you know.
Smart kid,
right? I agree with you. And he and his father and I were laughing. And, you know, that is negotiation, really, when it comes down to it, right? But, you know, we think that's cute from children. But when we do that as adults, we think, oh, that's manipulative. And the reality is that sales can be used for evil, or sales can be used for, or selling can be used for the benefit of all humanity, right? I mean,
yeah.
So it's one of those things, but if you look at anything that could be used that way, you know, you could use I mean, and take something controversial like alcohol, right? Alcohol can be fun if you're hanging around with a few friends, just having a couple of drinks and you're doing it responsibly and everything's great. You go to excess and you use it for evil, right? You get in a car drunk and one drives around and, you know, hits things or people or whatever. That's terrible, right? That's not. Yeah. So we could do that with anything. Automobiles, you know, fun to drive around in, but, you know, don't speed because you can hurt somebody. I think it's the perception of the people who think that they have to be that which they don't want to be in order to be successful in selling. And we sell each other all the time. Julie, yeah. I mean, you know, if you're in any type of relationship, you go on a first date, you're selling. Trust me, you're selling.
Yeah.
Right. You're selling to get that first date. It's called prospecting, right? You're looking, you're saying, wow, this person looks amazing. I'd like to go out with them. And so you prospect to make a request, you know, whether it's the man making the request, the woman making the request, it really doesn't matter. It's still prospecting. So I love sales because it's human communication and human relationships. And I've always loved that about people. I like what makes them kind of tick, if you will, you know, what makes them think the way they do and act the way they do. And, you know, sales and psychology are very well aligned.
Well, I mean, when you frame it out that way, I like sales. It sounds great to me. You know, I love communicating, but there's always that piece where we feel the rejection kind of hidden. It's like you do all this work and then you feel a little bit rejected because you take it personal,
right?
Especially when we're trying to reach out to new customers and clients. But I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit as we go through our ingredients for success. And so today we're going to talk about three ingredients for success that the top 1% of sales earners are doing. And so let's get right into your first ingredient.
Well, the first one would be truth with clarity. So what does that mean? That means that most people are not really clear on where they want to go and they're not being truthful about it. So what ends up happening is we build a plan and that plan doesn't go to plan because the plan was never based on an actual endpoint that was truthful in the first place. So, you know, even though we teach people how to think, act, and be, if they want to be 1% earners, most people I have found on this planet do not want to be a 1% earner. It requires a more of a shift in their own being than they're willing to go.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, you know, we as human beings, because we're brought up in whatever environment, we came from whatever environment, you know, any of us who have had children or multiple children know that, you know, the child moment one comes out with a personality and it's very different than child two or child three or child four, you know, even though they're the same parent. We've got that soul thing that comes out into the world that, you know, then gets mixed with society and conditioning. You know, we're all like, we're very clear. If you ask kids what they want to be when they're very little, they'll be very clear. I mean, they might say things like, I want to be a policeman or I want to be, you know, an astronaut or whatever they might say.
Right.
But they're clear in a path where they want to go.
Right.
If you ask the average adult, where do you want to go? They'll go, well, geez, let's see, how much money can I make out of this? And what can I do here? Well, I could go here, but that requires me to go back to school. And, you know, and the kids don't do that, right? They don't go, geez, astronaut school is going to be a real, you know, hard process for me to get through. They don't think about that. They go, I want to go to the moon, or I want to go here, or, you know, whatever it is, right? I want to be Oprah Winfrey. I've heard people say that, right? And it's like, okay, it's all possible and all doable. At that moment, kids are pretty truthful. Adults, not so truthful. You know, we've learned through time, through conditioning, you know, you can't think that way. My gosh, if you have more money than anybody in the family, you know, you're not part of this family, right? Those type of conditioning, or the opposite, like you need to make way more money than anyone we know in order to be successful, but the individual doesn't really want to put in that type of effort.
Well, right? And I think that, you know, this is something I talk about a lot, is purpose. And as a child, you have almost this pure, purposeful being that is saying, I want to be a police officer. I wanted to be a singer. I wanted to be a singer-songwriter. I haven't talked about that a lot, but really I had pictured myself doing this. And of course, my mother and father said to me, how are you going to make money with that?
Yep.
How are you going to do that? And I was like, I'm not quite sure, but I want to do it. And so I had to prove to them through multiple things that I could do it. I made a CD with 5 songs on it. And then finally, my mother says to me, aren't you going to do something with all those songs? I mean, you did this whole thing. And now, you know, after you actually complete something, they're like, oh, they actually start to believe that you can do it, you know? Right. But I was very clear back then, but then the world comes in and starts to knock you down. And that clear purpose starts to explode.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's interesting. You and I, we talked, you know, prior to, we have a lot in common, right? And one of those is music at that point, because that's what I wanted to be too. I wanted to be a professional musician. And, you know, I had the same thing, like, you know, they don't make money, right? That type of thing. And then when I was playing one day, I remember my mother came down and she said, you're never going to make it as a professional musician. Your grandmother was a concert pianist. You know, you just don't have the stuff, right? So that type of conditioning, because we're children, we want mom and dad's love, or whoever's love and approval, right? Whether it's mom, dad, teacher, preacher, whoever, you know, friends, whatever. We start to go, huh, maybe they're right, you know, and we start to go, oh, okay, we'll comply a little more so we can keep this relationship. And what we're doing is we're pulling us away from our true north, if you will, our authentic, truthful, clear path. And I remember when I was going through college, I actually sold music equipment, and I sold music equipment to a lot of the bands that, Julie, you and I listened to growing up, right? I mean, so, you know, the Eagles, Aerosmith, Billy Joel, you know, people like that, their bands I was working with selling music equipment. And I remember Boston, the band Boston, Barry Gaudreau said to me, he goes, you're a pretty good musician. And I said, well, thanks. I appreciate that. You know, this is the guy who's, you know, More Than a Feeling just had come out, you know, and it's, and so I'm like listening to this guy, and he goes, you should go to music school. And I said, well, which one? And they go, just pick one. So I picked Berklee College of Music. Now, remember, I was told I was never going to amount to anything, right? And in the music business. And Berklee College took me on the first try.
Wow.
And so what that told me was, okay, I just have guys, you know, from all walks of life in all these huge bands. I mean, you know, you don't get much bigger in those days than Aerosmith, Boston, Paul McCartney, the Eagles, right?
And the biggest guys went to Berklee, like the most famous ones.
Many of them did. I mean, the Cars went there, Till Tuesday, you know, different people. I've got these professional musicians that we're watching on television and all over the airwaves at that point saying, you know, you're good enough. And it was like, my mind was like, what? I'm not a concert pianist, right? You know, and so what happens is you then run into, like you said, the business of the business. The business of music is pretty brutal when it really comes down to it, right? I mean, it's all about the dollars and cents. So the creativity. So what happened with me was I started playing professionally in clubs, and we were doing quite well. And then I was talking to the guys from Boston again, and I said, how you doing? And they said, yeah, we're going out on tour. I said, oh, great. They go, yeah, 300 days on a bus. And they started explaining to me what the real life of being a musician, a professional musician, was. And I said to myself, geez, that's not really what I want. I don't, you know, I would like to have a children and a family and be home, you know, with my kids. But, you know, if you're going to be Elton John, you know, or whoever, you're going to be touring around the world all the time. And so that's where I made the truthful clarity decision of, you know what, I'm not going to be a professional musician on the road. I'll write songs. I'll do things like that. And I actually became a professional DJ, which worked out amazingly well. I was one of the top DJs in the Boston area for many, many years. So that, when, you know, when it comes to selling, we want to get truthful clarity to that as well. You know, what are our end goals? Because a lot of people don't have clear goals, so they're not building plans that are actually achievable. And they're always going to run up against, like you did and I did, you know, these objections and, you know, systems and processes issues and cash appropriation budgets, you know, all kinds of things. But the reality is, if we're clear on where we want to go, we're truthful about it, we can get you there.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that a lot. And then what is your second ingredient for success?
Believe it or not, it's massive prospecting. Most people don't recognize the truthful clarity of the business they're actually in. Right. And the
tell us what business we're in, Doug. What business are we in?
Well, we're in the client acquisition business in most businesses. So,
yeah, and that's a big shift. I'm a coach and a speaker and a trainer, but apparently I'm in the business of client acquisition, I was told.
Who told you that, Julie? I can't imagine who told you that.
I mean, some guy named Doug.
Really, when it comes down to it, well, if you're a coach, consultant, whatever, you know, frame somebody wants to put around ourselves, right? I'm a pastor at a church, right? Or whatever they want to say. I'm the rabbi. I'm whatever. Not without parishioners, not without people to talk to, right? So those are clients. And if we're a coach, we have to have clients in order to provide our services, our product or services. Sure. If we're a medical professional, if we're a doctor, but we're sitting in the office all alone every single day without patients, you know, but people don't think about that in the concept of client acquisition. And it's all about client acquisition. Netflix would not exist without people buying their product.
Yeah.
So Netflix.
And this is a big shift, especially, you know, in this day and age, we are moving into the solopreneur age. We are having so many more opportunities to do side hustles. Even people that have corporate jobs are looking at, how do I make more money? Like, we just can't make our bills with the one job we have.
Right.
We need multiple jobs. And so what people are looking at is, how can I do that? And I think the big shift for them is, well, the first thing you are is a client acquisition. Let's just call them masters.
Yeah.
Let's call them client acquisition master. That is your first responsibility, is to actually gather the clients so that you can do the thing that lights you up from the inside out. Because most of us who are solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, are doing our passion. That's why we do what we do, is because we get to do what we want to do in that respect. So hopefully that thing that you're doing as your solopreneur, entrepreneurial adventure, and I call it an adventure because it is something that lights you up from the inside. But I think the big shift here is the client acquisition piece.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So there's a difference between entrepreneurial thought and on being an entrepreneur.
Right? That's good.
So one is that creative inside energy. And we all love that because that we feel alive.
Yeah.
But then it meets the business, the real business, which is money out, money in equals something. That's the formula, really, when it comes down to it, right? And so that creativity is like, oh, I got this amazing idea. But then it reaches the market, which the market determines whether that idea is acceptable or not. And that's why we want to focus on becoming, as you said, a client acquisition master. Because the more we do that, the more that we bring people in, the more we can help them with that inside out creativity that we have. Because, you know, and that's going back to the original question, like, why do I love sales? It's about communication and relationships. And it's about getting people their dreams, you know, solving problems and opening up opportunities for other people, right? Mm-hmm. And so to me, that was like, wow, that's really a noble thing to do, like helping somebody cross the barrier of fear to get their goal and their dream.
Yeah.
And selling is one of the ways to make money very quickly. The cool thing about selling is you really don't need a formal education. You just not have to know how to the process and the system of how to create, you know, sales.
Yeah.
I want to talk client acquisition. Go ahead.
Exactly. I want to talk a little bit about the urgency piece, because we talked a little bit about that before, and you were very serious in some of these examples that you gave. They were like, it's like a life or death kind of situation where the rubber meets the road. You have this idea, you did the education, you did everything you need to do, and now it's time to be the client acquisition master.
Right.
And so you gave a couple examples. I don't know if you want to give one of those examples here. I'm not sure
if I remember them all, but I can probably give it an example.
I mean, one of them was we jumped out of the airplane into the jungle.
Right. Yeah. So the question is, if you jump out of the airplane into the jungle, then what's the first thing that you're going to look for when you're in the jungle? Like you got nothing. You don't know where you are. You're in the middle of the jungle. So you're going to look for survival basics right in the beginning, right? How do I get shelter, food, water? Those are the three basics. You know, we're not looking to go, geez, I wonder if I can buy a Lamborghini here. You know, that, I mean, that's not what we're doing. We're going, all right, I'm in a position where I don't know where I'm at. I don't know what's in this jungle. I mean, I'm assuming things might consume me if I'm not, you know, careful enough. So I'm going to now take action and I'm going to go build something for shelter. I'm going to get something to eat. I'm going to get something, you know, that's, you know, of liquid refreshment so I can sustain life.
Yeah.
Now, when we equate that back to selling, that means you got to go get clients, right? So we have to take action initially to go do that. So what do? We get as clear on the target as we possibly can. We start outbound activity to go get some conversations going. And some of those conversations lead to food, shelter, and water. And the thing is that most people are not willing to actually do that component of it. So basically they dehydrate and die in the jungle, right? When they're selling. And in most people's businesses, my wife's going to kill me here. I'll tell her story. So she was originally my client. My wife was. And we joked because she got a really good ROI through our engagement of coaching and then through the marriage, I hope. But, you know, she was in this perpetual creation mode because she's really good at what she does. And she was creating something around performance on the human body. So she's really good. She was a personal trainer. She's really smart at this stuff. And so she approached me and said, I want to coach with you. She went through a sales course that I did. Somebody asked me to do a sales course for them. She said, geez, I'd like to work with you. I said, okay, great. So she shows up and I looked at all what she showed me. And I said, it's fantastic. She goes, yeah, I'm not quite done yet. I said, really? She goes, yeah. I said, how long have you been working on this? She goes, 2 years. I said, okay, coaching session's over. She goes, what do you mean? I said, I want you to go sell this. She goes, it's not done. I said, I know. She goes, well, how do I sell it? So we went through a little process on how to sell it. And I said, don't call me back until you sell at least a few of these.
Right.
That was my coaching. Right. And so she's like, are you serious? I'm like, yep, bye. So she calls me back in 7 days. We sat an appointment. It's 3 days later. So 10 days, we get back on the phone. I go, how did it go? She goes, I think I did okay. I said, how many did you sell? She goes, 36. I said, 36. I said, at what? She told me the price. I said, you just made a year's worth of income in less than a week.
Wow.
She goes, yeah, but now I've got a problem. I go, what is it? She goes, I don't have my course. I said, when did you set the date? She said, for 2 weeks from now. I said, okay, finish your course. Call me back when it's done. That was our coaching. So she made a year's worth of income in a bloody week, so to speak, in England, right? In a fantastic week.
Wow.
Because she wasn't focused on client acquisition, or as you said, becoming a client acquisition master, I kind of pushed her out of the nest because I knew she could do it. I gave her the skills. And so it's just a matter of now doing it.
Exactly.
And she earned a year's income in a week.
That's amazing. I love that story. And, you know, it is just a shift in mindset and activities, right? You just have to shift what you're doing, because instead of getting into this zone of creation, which I am very guilty of, I'm very mm-hmm. guilty of this. I will find everything under the sun on what to do rather than do sales. I will look at my emails. I will like, oh, let me do a live, or let me do a, what did I do yesterday? I was supposed to do sales. I probably shouldn't really admit this, but I was going to spend 2 hours on sales yesterday. And I created a video instead.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's healthy distraction, but the reality is, and, you know, and for those of us, people are listening, you know, Julie and I, we had a pretty candid conversation about getting truthful clarity, right? I mean, in the beginning of our conversation. And I found this so fantastic on your end, because, you know, people think sometimes that people who are very successful actually don't get into these ruts or get into these, you know, positions, right? That's one of the values of having outside influences looking in. This is a never-ending process, is what I want people to get. Even if their goal is something that other people look at and go, that's all, you know, you want to make $80,000 a year, right? And you're so much more capable of making that. That doesn't mean it's right for the individual if their goal truthfully is $80,000 a year.
Yeah. Can you tell us, okay, you said massive prospecting, but can you define that and give us some examples of like how to make that really work?
Yes, but I'd have to charge your audience. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm sure you would. This is why I wanted you to tell me. I really want to know.
Okay. So it's something I call six ways, Julie. And six ways I've been teaching for years. Six ways is, how do you get six new methods in addition to what you're doing today over the next 6 to 12 months to work in your business? So Jay Conrad Levinson, I learned this originally from him. He wrote a series of books called Guerrilla Marketing. And Jay and I were talking one day, and I said to him, I said, Jay, you know, why don't people put more in play? He said, they just don't have two things. One, patience, because it takes a little while to work.
Yeah.
And two, implementation. They don't put it in play. So they want something to happen, but they never put it in place. So we take six different new ways of doing this. So you would ask some ways of doing this. You know, I love simple, easy things to do. Like email marketing to me is so simple. Mm-hmm. You have a program, you know, I have a automated business development prospecting follow-up software coming out at the end of this year, for example, which will do some of these things for people. So, you know, how do you go outbound and get interest to come inbound to have sales conversations? That's prospecting. Mm-hmm. So email marketing, as long as you do it the right way and you do it in a way that's meaningful and relevant to people, you'll get higher conversion rates out of that off your email than you could expect. You know, a lot of people say, well, geez, I sent out 100. I got, you know, one or two appointments. Well, if you think about it, if that system's sending out, you know, 50 or 100 a day and you're getting one or two appointments a day, you got, you know, 5 to 10 appointments per week just out of that one modality. But there's different modalities, right? There's networking, there's speaking, like doing podcasts like we're doing now. That's a form of speaking. There's referrals. There is cold calling. If you do cold calling the right way, you don't get rejected. A lot of people think cold calling is dead. It's not. Direct mail, that's another way of not, it's, if you think about it, most people aren't cold calling today and they're not doing direct mail. So if you're doing direct mail or cold calling and going out, then people are going to recognize. And what you want to do is build up over a period of time and measure these modalities. Now, there's literally 100+ ways of doing this.
Yeah.
So you take the ones that are working, you keep going, you tweak, try to make them better. You take the ones who aren't working, you tweak once or twice, figure out if it's going to work. And if not, you drop it and then put a new one in. But what you want over the years period of time is six new shiny ways of having business come into you through pull or push. So yeah. Pull is you put something out, somebody responds to it. Push is you're directly going out to get a direct response.
Right. And this is brilliant, because a lot of the people that will be listening here are corporate people that want to possibly start a side hustle. And the point is that whatever that side hustle is, the most important thing is to gain these clients and to do the client acquisition part, because without that, you have nothing. So how do you help people like me sort of break it down so it doesn't feel so big?
Yeah. So it's what I call short, 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 long, right? It's SSSL. And the reason you do this is you want to do activities that create short-term response. So for example, you yourself, not you, Julie, but anybody listening to this, a podcast is a way to get your word out, but you're not going to get quick response in most cases from doing your own podcast. It's going to take months, if not a year or 2 years, for you to start to see traction coming through on your podcast for leads. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of the people who sell podcasting packages don't like me for this reason, but the reality is I live in truth. Right? For most people, they're not going to get a lead off their podcast immediately.
Sure.
But you can get a lead off someone else's podcast. Because our podcast that we're starting up, we have to build the audience. We have to build the trust. They don't necessarily know this. But if I go on the Julie Rega podcast, you already have an audience that you've been talking to for a long time. And if I sound reasonably intelligent and somebody goes, geez, I need that, they may reach out to me. And I've had that happen. So we want to go short, 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 long. The challenge for most people is they try to go long, long, short, long, long, short, right? And what happens is that runway of cash flow burn continues to drop over the long period of time.
Yeah.
And that's what I did with my, you know, now my wife, right? I mean, she was barely keeping her head above water and I just pushed her into the pool, so to speak. And here's the thing I've learned about doing this with people. Most of the stuff that we think is scary is not that scary once you're in it for a little while.
Yeah. And that actually leads us to our last ingredient, which is the win-win part.
Yeah.
Because win-win to me does not sound so scary.
No, because you win, they win.
Doug, this has been an amazing conversation. I just want to do a quick recap on the three ingredients. If you could just recap the three ingredients, and then let's get some information on how our audience can find out more about you.
Sure. Hope I remember them. Truthful clarity is number one. Massive prospecting, as you said, become a client acquisition master would be number two. Number three is always play win-win. And when you're in conversational selling, always play win-win. If you win, they win. If not, you are the first to disengage for their benefit and for yours. Those are the three.
Yeah. And Doug, wow. Like so much value in this conversation. Everyone should be listening to this podcast. I loved it. Tell us more about what you're doing right now and how our audience can find out more about you.
So in the fourth quarter of this year, we're releasing something called the 1% Academy, where we're teaching people how to think, act, and be if they choose to be a 1% earner. You know, 1% earner is that person who's earning at the top 1% of their area or society or whatever, right? So, you know, for example, in the United States and on the low in West Virginia, it's $357,000 a year. In Connecticut, it's like $967,000 a year, right? So it depends geographically where they live. That's how we define it. Could be in their industry. In the Great Britain, I think it's 15,000 British pounds a month, right? So we're teaching people how to think, act, and be that 1% sales earner. Now, if they want to be in the top 5%, that's fine. But we're teaching them how to think and act with leverage and do with leverage through the process. So that opens up in the fall if somebody's interested in that. Julie, do you mind if I give away an ebook?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay. So I just finished this ebook yesterday. So it's going to go out for sale, but to Julie Rigger's audience, we give it to as pro bono gratis. So it's if they go to www.ceosalesstrategies.com/1PE. So the number one, Paul Edward. It stands for 1% ebook. They can pick the ebook up for free at that point. And if people want to reach out to us, they have comments or they want to know more about the Academy, just send an email to youmatter, youmatter at ceosalesstrategies.com. And of course, if they want to hit me up, I'm Doug at, or my LinkedIn is Doug Brown 123.
Okay, great. And I will have all of these links in the show notes. So you can just grab those links after you listen to this episode. Doug, it has been amazing talking to you. Thank you so much for being a guest on the Stand Course podcast.
I really appreciate you having me here, Julie. Thank you so, so much.
My dad, Ennio Auriga, was not just a chef. He was my hero. From the hardships of World War II to the heights of culinary excellence, his story is nothing short of remarkable. Now, this story lives on in Stay on Course, a book that is very close to my heart. It's filled with his own words, his recipes, and the wisdom he imparted to me. Just imagine, 4 months before he passed, he handed me his life story, urging me to finish it. In these pages, you'll discover the secrets behind mouthwatering dishes and the lessons he taught me about leadership and perseverance. And trust me, there are some incredible tales in here, like the time he pulled off a birthday bash for Frank Sinatra with just 48 hours notice. So, if you're hungry for inspiration and craving a taste of Ennio's legacy, head over to stayoncoursebook.com. That's stayoncoursebook.com. Grab your copy and let his story ignite your passion.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Stay on Course. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast so Julie can continue serving up delectable experts and appetizing content directly to your earbuds. And remember, right now, you have the ingredients to be living the life you are meant to live. This has been a production of The Media Casters.